Hello, all you heretics. Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast. I'm Matt Overstreet.
And I'm Chris Huffman.
And Chris, I want to get right into it today. We've had some stuff in Denver that has happened recently that I think we should talk about.
Yeah, I don't think we could do a show without addressing this at this point.
Right. Of course, if you have been under a rock, the street takeover that happened on 225 about a week ago, and just how incredibly stupid that was.
Yeah, you know, I love Fast and Furious too.
right? We all love those movies.
But, you know, it's when the mayor is talking about what you're doing, you know, I know it's also flattering, but you know, he's got the police amped up against you guys now. And I don't think that an overzealous police response is the right answer to this either.
No, of course not. But that's kind of all they know how to do.
It is. It's leave everything alone or harass teenagers and homeless people.
Right. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Just real quick, speaking of the Fast and Furious, somebody posted that on one of the Facebook groups about like the, you know, the street takeover. And yeah, the first thing I did was find the picture of Streets Closed Pizza Boy. Yeah. The way home. I had to post that. Because it is ridiculous, but I couldn't pass up a good opportunity to use a meme.
Yeah.
But yeah, so what was it? They said 600 cars, which I think is bullshit.
Well, they said they blocked off traffic and the shoulders. Yeah. So I think at a certain point when there's a lot of streetcars, which this, you know, this kind of factors back into the overzealous police response, every car with a funky paint job or a spoiler is considered part of this event.
Right.
When, you know, like your orange Fiesta, if you were sitting in traffic, people probably would have thought you were part of the street right. racing event. And then they were like, well, there's 491. Keep counting.
Right. Well, I wonder if they'd just like, man, look at all these cars backed up to like 25. That's got to be like 600 cars. There's 600 cars street racing. And it's like, no, they have traffic backed up. Like, you know, it's 20 people blocking traffic.
Yeah.
Maybe, you know,
15 teenagers could pull that off.
Right. Because I've been out to the, you know, the Nationwide or, man, I can't even think of, it's been so long since I've been on all these car meets. I forget who all the street racer boys are.
Oh, like Import Alliance and back in my day, it was Nopi Nationals, but that just kind of,
well, these are just like local car club guys. Okay. So there's Nationwide Productions, which has nothing to do with Nationwide Insurance. Which I was really confused about when I moved here.
I'm guessing Nationwide Insurance wants nothing to do with them.
Yeah, I'm guessing so. There's Everybody's Car Scene, ECS, which I haven't seen them post anything in a long time. They might be gone. And there's a couple more. But I've been out with those people. And for the most part, everybody there is chill. But then like 10% of the people there are dumb asshats that want to like do 5-mile-an-hour rolls on I-70 going through Denver with semi-trucks barreling up on them and shit like that.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's what really sucks to me is like those people are ruining the car meet scene here.
Yeah, because, you know, I don't know if you saw that article about police boxing in a bunch of cars in Arvada.
Yep. Yeah, that was the old Home Depot lot because they always meet there, I think.
And they were just like, well, these kids must be out here to street race, when in reality, a lot of them were probably just out there to meet friends and, you know, get out of their house during COVID.
Right. Yeah, I will say the one article I saw, it was from some owner of a bunch of like industrial spaces in Aurora.
Okay.
And he was talking about how like, hey, these kids are coming in, they're doing donuts and like breaking down gates and stuff, and like I guess they were doing donuts in a parking garage and has like some special coating on the concrete to make it so that way it doesn't swell or absorb moisture.
No,
and
they
stuff
destroyed it.
And they destroyed that. How much of that is kind of bullshit and them talking it up like they caused $300,000 of damage? And it's like, no, they didn't. Like
that's how much it cost to reseal the whole parking garage.
Yeah, that's what you're telling your insurance, so you get that payout. But so I think that's a little bit bullshit too, but at the very least, they're causing some damage. And but I will say the guy who owned this, he was actually pretty cool. He was like, I don't think he said I get it, but he's just like, you know, all these kids they've been stuck at home forever. They need an outlet. They're getting anxious. They're getting riled up, and this is a way to blow off some steam.
Yeah.
And he's like, I was like, huh, you know, I'm on your side then. Like, if you're like, hey, stop causing damage, I get it.
Right.
And when people just go all one way, you know, this is kind of my political thing. But yeah, if you go too far one direction or the other and don't see the cause and effect of things,
right, like,
then yeah, you're not actually helping the matter at all.
It's really easy to demonize people who think in a different way than you do.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what we're looking at here when we see an overzealous response. You know, the police kind of have their hands tied because the mayor of Aurora was on them about it.
Right.
Asking him to, the police to monitor, you know, social media accounts of high school kids.
Right.
You know, to prevent street racing. And it's like, that's more than you should ask of your police department.
Right.
Because best case scenario, you end up, you know, in 1984.
Right. Yeah, that's literally like, you know, that overwatching, like, dystopian type thing.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I don't want people listening to think we're like, no, go close down highways and street race. Right. Like,
that definitely was, don't do that.
That was incredibly stupid. And I'm mad at those people because now this is the response.
Yes.
You know, if you stay chill, like just do your car meets, if you want a street race, honestly, go out east where there's absolutely fucking nothing. And that's what they used to do. Like, yeah, when I first came here, like the car meets, it'd usually be you go to a lot. After a while, the police kick you out. They put them a new spot. You go to that lot. And then after that, it's usually about midnight by that time. Then a bunch of people start, like, you know, being like, oh, well, you know, I'll race you. You know, they start talking money and start talking, you know,
yeah,
challenges and stuff. And then they'd go to the middle of fucking nowhere, out of town, and they do their street racing thing, and they come back at like 5-6 in the morning.
Right.
Nobody knew. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
And nobody got hurt. But
closing
now,
closing down 225.
It's so stupid.
Yeah, there's so, I mean, any highway in Denver, I mean, with all the people moving here, and I'm one of them.
Right.
You know, but I'm responsible for creating a lot of this traffic, but the traffic exists.
It doesn't matter what time of day, what time of night, there's traffic everywhere. There's yeah, people on the roads. Yeah. You don't do it on residential streets. Don't do it where there's a bunch of traffic.
Yeah. And you know, when I was in high school, I did a lot of these stupid things.
Yeah, to be fair, I mean, I think we all kind of came from that kind of shit.
Yeah, that's kind of the genesis of our culture, especially for people our age.
Right.
But it just gets to the point where you've got to know where the line is, you know?
Right. And that was definitely a line.
Yeah, I was definitely crossing it. And, you know, anybody who was out there involved, I hope you had a good time. But I also hope, you know, we don't see another lockdown like this, because I drive a car that's modified and I don't want to start getting pulled over every 10 feet like I did when I lived in Tennessee.
Right. Well, did you see the law now that they just passed in Colorado Springs? So any car that is suspected of street racing can be impounded.
Suspected.
Suspected.
So, yeah, they don't even need proof now to take your car.
Right. Just, hey, fast car. I'm going to take it. Like, yeah, there's no corrupt police divisions anywhere in the country that are just going to take advantage of that law to get some extra revenue.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, Colorado Springs is a little bit more of a conservative area, and those tend to be a little bit quicker on those regulations.
It's right.
Like anything we can do to stifle teenagers, we're going to do it.
Right.
But I don't want to see Denver turn into that.
No, hopefully not. Like, that's the thing. It's like, the more this crazy bullshit happens, the more the response is going to be extreme, and the more that's going to affect people just like me or you or the listeners that just like their modified cars.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so, you want to be able to go down the road and get groceries in your car with coilovers.
Right.
Without, you know, getting harassed. It's like, well, your car looks like it could street race. It's like, yeah, it could, but I go on the track.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's what religious speed's all about. Get it out on the fucking track.
Yeah.
Because I get it. Street racing is kind of exciting. Mm-hmm. It's also kind of silly. Like, don't get me wrong, drag racing is racing, but doing highway pulls requires zero skill.
Yeah,
It doesn't. Sorry. You built a really cool fast car, but you're not a skilled person. Like, it's the only adrenaline rush is because you know it's illegal and stupid and dangerous.
And having, you know, done this in high school and experience the negative effects of it. Weaving in and out of traffic at 100 miles an hour is not a skill you want to spend time polishing.
No, not really.
Because the risks are very, very high.
Right.
You know, I've had some bad wrecks. I've seen friends have bad wrecks. And, you know, and these are guys that are still into the car scene. But they could have ended up very, very grievously injured.
Right.
You know, I could have ended up, I actually, my old EG Civic hit a pickup truck sideways at 100 miles an hour while I was doing exactly this.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was lucky to limp away from that. But it's the kind of thing you know, I don't want to see anybody else have to learn the lesson the hard way like that.
Right.
To see your buddy club front bumper get just absolutely destroyed by a set of off-road tires.
Right.
It's really painful.
But it could have been a lot more painful, too.
It could have been.
Like, that's the thing about the track is it can be dangerous and all that, but at the track, there's safety stuff in place. There's tire barriers. There's sand traps to stop you. There's people there to, you know, take care of you if you do wreck. You know, you generally needed a helmet. It's a much more controlled environment. Yeah. And it's still exciting. It's still dangerous.
It is. And here's the coolest thing about going on the track. You actually polish your skill more.
Right.
You know, people say, oh, it's like, well, track time is expensive. And it is. It is cheaper to street race until you get a ticket or you wreck into something.
Yes. Until your car gets impounded now, and I buy it at a fucking police auction. Thank you, by the way. I'm like, oh, cool. Hey, a modified Civic for $300. Thank you.
It's been wrecked, but I can use those parts.
Right?
and, you know, it's, you don't think about it till you get on the track and you really see the difference. But when you're street racing, or doing donuts in a parking lot, you're doing it for a few minutes and then you get out of there before the police show up.
Right.
When you're on a track, you actually have that time to think, to stop and kind of really go through what happened while you were on the track, what you could have done better. And you go out and you do another lap and you try your ideas.
Right.
And that systematic approach is a better way to polish your skill because, you know, track time is expensive, but if you spend $100 to spend all day driving around IMI, you're going to walk away from that with more skill than spending a whole day finding neighborhoods and back roads the police don't patrol.
Right.
Spending 20 minutes doing it and then running home.
Yeah.
You know, the scramble in Too Fast, Too Furious looks really cool. I've done that too.
Right.
It's a lot scarier in person.
Right.
And it sucks for the car in the back because they get caught.
Yeah, you don't want to be in the back of that. You're like, no, get me in front. No, it's just like just people just vying for the like not last place.
Yeah.
But and the thing about the track too is like, and the reason I like it a lot is there's empirical evidence that you're either getting better or getting worse, or the tuning you did is better or worse.
Yeah.
On the street, there's so many goddamn factors. Like
there are a lot of variables.
Like you could have been in a little rut of the fucking concrete, or like, you know, whatever it is. There's just too many variables out there. Like when you're on the track, even if it's just drag racing, it's all very empirical. It's very, you know, you can learn. You can take your ideas like, hey, maybe I'm going to try this technique.
Yeah.
Okay. I tried that a few times. I got slower. You know, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try this, or I'm going to tune it this way. It just, I don't know. To me, maybe I'm just getting old too. Maybe I'm just like, this is ridiculous. And I did the street racing thing, but I was never too into it because I was always so worried about getting caught that I wasn't enjoying it.
Yeah, that anxiety,
right?
That messes with your ability to polish your skill set.
Right.
And that's something that you can't discount. And it's something that's really easy to look past when you're young. And,
yeah.
You know, I wish I could avoid anxiety like I did when I was young.
Yeah, right.
Just about everything. You know?
Yeah. I don't know. I've always had anxiety. So actually, I think I'm doing better now than I was as a child. But
well, here's to growth.
Yeah, right. What was I going to say? Oh, also, for me personally, it was different too because I was trying to be a mechanic and losing my license was like that was the end of my career. Like, you can't test drive cars. You can't do anything, you know?
Yeah, if you don't have a clean driving record.
Right.
Nobody's going to hire you. I've lost my license several times.
Of course you have.
I had to drive around Tennessee without a license for quite a while. Honestly, that I had no license for so long that by the time I got it back, my record was clean, and that's how I was able to start working in the auto industry.
Okay.
But it's not the kind of thing you want to have to go through.
No.
And, you know, some states are worse about it than others.
Yeah.
Obviously, you've heard me talk about the South. Anywhere with overzealous policing,
yep,
you know, is going to end up being a worse place to be a gearhead.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's... again, that's not what I want Denver to turn into.
No, it's already, you know, people already make comments about Denver becoming California, you know, emissions laws and street racing laws and stuff like that, just making it harder and harder. But also, it almost kind of seems like, in a way, the harder you make it, the more people want to do it.
Yeah, it is funny. Because
people are weirdly defiant like that.
They are, especially people who know how to turn a wrench.
Right, yeah.
Like, you can't tell me what I can't do.
Yeah, most people that turn wrenches are very, what's what I'm looking for? Just independent thinkers.
Yes. Yeah, that's why everybody's always, that's where the, that adage, you know, you love to use about racing, if you ain't cheating, you ain't winning.
Right, yeah.
Because it's like, oh, well, you can't tell me how not to do this. I'll find a way that, that satisfies your rules and still yeah. breaks the spirit of them.
Pretty much. Yeah, something weird about us for sure.
But it's cool. I mean, you need independent thinkers in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and the, yeah, I kind of wish more people gave, like, car guys credit for that kind of stuff. You know, it takes a lot of out-of-box thinking to be a good racer, honestly.
Yeah, and to keep an old car running on a budget.
That too.
Yeah.
I'm kind of going to jump ahead right now, because you bringing that up actually made me think about this. We're going to go to some auto biz news. This one's not so much like budget racing oriented news, but I just really want to talk about this. There was a company called Canoe Electric as a concept for a new small pickup truck, and it looks really cool. If you Google it, you'll see, like, it's got like this big glass dome front end, kind of almost like the old Ford Econoline cab over pickups.
It does look like that. I love the way this thing looks, those cross headlights. I don't know if that would make it to production, but right. I really dig the way that looks.
Well, I'm doubting this thing will make it to production at all. But my question was, wow, that's a weird mix of CG and actual people.
The bed opens on the left side?
Yeah, it's got like a little bit of a fold-down bed in it. So that's a lot like the old Ford Econoline pickups, actually.
This looks like it's marketed specific to Coloradians.
Right, with all the snow and stuff and the roof rack. And like, yeah, no, it's... Oh, look at that. With
the tent on the topper roof.
And the camper top, yep. Yeah, so in the show notes, we'll have links to all these stories so you can take a look, because it's not very good podcast material to be talking about images. But my point was, and well, you brought up, you know, you have to be innovative to keep cars on the road and stuff like that. If these cars come out from all these super small manufacturers, how many of them are, if they even make it to production, how many of them are going to last, these companies? In the early days of the automotive world, there were a ton of car companies.
Yeah.
And most of them folded in like 5-10 years.
Right. Now they've been kind of concentrated. You know, we don't see AMC anymore, but Jeep's still a thing.
Right. There were tons of car brands back then, though. Like, I mean, the Studebaker, that lasted a while. But there were like a lot of really weird ones that we've never even heard of. But when those went out of production and closed, the parts stopped, too.
Yeah.
So with these... all these electric startups, how many of them are going to just like, hey, I bought this $150,000 cool pickup truck and the company folded and I can't get parts.
Yeah. Now it just sits in a display case.
Right.
Which is like what we were talking about earlier about the Fisker Karma.
Yeah.
Because that's what happened with that thing. It came out very expensive, very gorgeous car.
Yeah.
Designed to satisfy enthusiasts, but still kind of step forward and be a plug-in hybrid.
Right.
But now when you see one, it's like, oh, wow, look at that Fisker Karma.
Right. You're actually driving that?
Yeah. Like, I don't think I've ever seen one actually moving. I've seen them sitting.
I've actually seen one around Denver.
Really? Driving?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there's somebody around here that has one that actually drives it quite a bit.
Wow.
I think.
I'd love to talk to this guy and see how he keeps it running.
Right? I mean, luckily, electric cars are pretty simple as far as the mechanical parts go, but... there's also just like, I mean, you know, look at this car. What happens if you chip that windshield?
Yeah, I don't know where you'd find a curved windshield like that. Because I'm betting that this concept, that windshield was created by an aircraft company.
Yeah.
On very limited production capacity.
Right.
Curved glass looks awesome, though.
Yeah, it looks great. Like, but it just like, okay, shit, like now I have a broken windshield on this really expensive vehicle that I can't drive anymore because I can't get a windshield made for it unless I pay another $100,000 for some small niche company to make me a custom windshield.
Yeah, and then hope it fits.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's Colorado, so your windshields, you know, people break windshields more often than they buy new tires here.
Yeah.
And that's I was blown away when I moved here. I was just like, wait a minute, you're going to replace a set of windshield before you get a new set of tires? Right.
Well, that's because they use gravel in the mountains there. So anytime you drive in the mountains, you're just asking for gravel.
Yeah, I got caught actually headed here a few weeks ago behind a truck that had drive-out tags. So I knew the person had just gotten the truck, so I didn't blame them. But it had rock tamers that were far too small for the big tires that were on this thing. And I was watching the rocks spray off these tires.
Yeah.
And I gave that guy plenty of room.
Yep. Yeah, you got to keep your distance.
Yeah, because it'll sling a rock straight into your windshield. Oh, yeah. And then you're done. Then your windshield's done.
Or it could be something stupid like what happened to my Fiesta. I was on the way to work one morning, and I was driving, and all of a sudden this things just started getting kicked up like crazy. There was just a bunch of something on the road, and I realized it was glass.
Oh.
And one of those trucks carrying like the panes of glass, you know, the glass had just fallen off the truck and just shattered in the middle of the highway.
Holy shit.
So guess what's really good at breaking glass?
Glass?
Glass. So yeah, it just came in and chipped it, right? And I got a small mark. I need to figure out, I'm going to try to fix that. Use one of those fixing kits.
Yeah, one of the little injector kits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't spread yet, and it's just a little chip crack. So I'm going to try to do that before I have to replace the whole damn windshield.
Yeah, because if it's spiders beyond like the size of a dollar bill, then
yeah,
it's done. It's time for the new pane of glass.
Then you're done. So, yeah, anybody who owns a Fisker Karma, if you're listening, or knows somebody who owns a Fisker Karma, like, well, that one might not be good, because I was telling you there is a company now called Karma who bought all the production dies and stuff like that for those cars and so continuing to make them.
So they're using all the same parts.
Yeah, it's exactly the same car.
Okay, that's great. I mean, I'm glad to see that because I had, you know, that's the best looking plug-in hybrid that I've seen hit the market in a long time.
I'm still not so sure I like the mustache gaping mouth front end, but
it looks like a play on a BMW grill, like the old kidney grill.
Well, don't worry. BMW is going to get there eventually. They just keep getting bigger and bigger. So
eventually they'll have a mustache too.
Right. But yeah, I'm really curious how that's going to work out. If we're just going to have a whole bunch of super cheap chassis for just playing around with.
But that's exciting in its own right.
Right.
Yeah. Like if that little truck came out and it's like, well, let's put a little 3-cylinder K-truck engine in it.
Right.
Let's have some fun.
Or, you know, LS.
Yeah, or, you know, there's always an LS or a 2J.
Yeah, why not?
They're the most swapped engines in the world.
Right. So, yeah, maybe we can just get these nice, cool, weird chassis in the future and make them the complete opposite of what they were intended to be.
Well, this is a step into a new, cleaner world. What powers it? Corvette engine.
Speaking of stepping into a new, cleaner world, Porsche says it has invented a synthetic fuel that can make gasoline-powered engines just as clean as EVs.
You know, Porsche does a lot of innovative engineering, but that sounds like a claim from the marketing department.
Right? So, I was doing some reading on this, and pretty much how they're getting at this is this fuel, it does burn a lot cleaner. Don't get me wrong. It's a lot cleaner burning fuel. You're still burning fuel.
Yeah, you're still combusting.
So, their thing is, and I've actually said this too, that keeping an old car on the road with cleaner burning fuel is better for the environment than building a brand new electric car.
And that's absolutely true.
Yes.
They said they did a great thing on Top Gear about, you know, calculating the environmental cost of mining nickel for first gen Priuses out of Canada and then shipping it to China to build the batteries, which were installed in Japan before the car was finally shipped back over the ocean to America.
Right.
And it's like, you burned a lot of carbon. You released a lot of carbon.
Right.
Just doing that.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to own that Prius for quite a while, longer than the length of, or than the lifespan of that lithium ion battery pack.
Yep.
Or this was a nickel battery pack.
Yeah, the
pack.
Nickel metal hybrid. Yeah. Hybrid.
This was longer than the lifespan of that.
Right.
Just to offset the carbon and cost of building it.
Right. Yeah, and I've said that before too. And like, don't get me wrong, I know electric is the way we're going, and I think it's actually going to be the way to go. But we also have to like deal with our electrical grid.
Yes.
And how we transport things like via ships and stuff.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it's like what I see, like gasoline emissions from consumer grade vehicles, or, you know, chainsaws, lawnmowers, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Makes up like, it was something like 7 to 10%.
Oh, wow. So the rest is all commercial.
Yeah. And then the rest is commercial. So it's like that. And don't get me wrong, when you look at the pie chart of where CO2 emissions is coming from, like 7 to 10% is a good big chunk.
Yeah.
You know, that's as far as like one single thing causing a bigger part of the pie.
Yeah.
That is a very big chunk.
It's not insignificant.
It's not insignificant. But with there's so much emphasis on this part of that pie chart without looking at any of the rest of the pie chart. We have 90% of other CO2 emissions that we could also be dealing with.
Yeah.
You know?
And it's the stuff we don't see.
Right.
It's the container ships. I mean, we see the semi-trucks on the road.
Right.
And, you know, that's when Tesla announced that they were going to make an autonomous electric semi-truck. I'm like, that would be great for everyone except truck drivers.
Yes. Well, luckily, I think, at least for the foreseeable future, like, if anything, those trucks will be, like, over-the-road stuff, highway stuff. But once you get into cities, like, self-driving stuff just isn't there.
Right.
I mean, it's not hardly there yet for highways, let alone in cities, you know.
But even if there was a hub, you know, when you get in, you get off a main highway, like, that alone, especially if you're driving across the country. I don't know if you've ever been in a Miata and heard a Jake brake go off next to your head.
Yeah.
But it's not fun. It's not pleasant.
So this is what I've been saying, though, for a long time. Like, if you really want to be an environmentally responsible person, buy a cheap old Corolla that already gets 30 miles a gallon and keep that on the road.
Yeah.
That's the best thing you could do if you need to drive a car and are all about the environment.
Yeah.
Don't go buy a brand new car.
Yeah. And you know, those old Corollas are easy to keep running.
Right. Exactly.
Any old Toyota or Honda, they're usually just bulletproof little things.
Yep.
And you don't have to think much about the maintenance. And like you said, they're great on gas. They're better than some modern hybrids.
Right. Yeah, they actually are. Well, hybrids have gotten actually a little bit better the last few years. But yeah, especially like, I mean, first gen Prius, it got like 40, 50.
The Honda CRZ got like 28.
Yeah. The Honda mild hybrids were never all that great. But yeah, so if we can use this synthetic fuel to help transition as well and keep old cars, or also to keep old cars on the road, because at some point in the future, it's going to be a long time, gasoline is going to be hard to come by.
Yeah. Once, like you were talking about earlier, once the supply diminishes.
Right.
You know, once the demand diminishes, the supply will follow.
Yeah.
And I hope that this fuel will be friendly to old engines.
Yeah. I think they were saying that requires some stuff. I mean, kind of like switching over to ethanol, you know.
Okay.
Because it probably is an ethanol-based fuel, I would imagine, if you're doing a fully synthetic thing.
Yeah.
If
it's artificial and, I mean, if it's ethanol, then it's sustainable. We can grow fields of fuel.
And this fuel, according to them, is a reduction of CO2 by 85%.
Wow.
So that's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
And I think that this can also allow us in the future to keep racing our classic cars and doing our internal combustion engine stuff. So I'm all for this.
Yeah, if it's available and if I can put it in an old car and, you know, modify it reasonably just so I'm not corroding things.
Right.
I'd like that, you know, especially if it comes to a lower cost for fuel.
Right.
Because fuel and tires are two of the biggest expenses for racing.
Yeah. I did have to joke on one of the forums online, though, because I'm pretty sure making a fuel that is as clean as electric cars is actually the plot for Cars 2.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The all-in-all that is actually meant to blow up cars and stuff. So is Porsche actually the villain in this?
I hope not. I really hope not.
Is this Cars 2? Yeah, is Mater going to have to come save us all?
They dealt a blow when the 911 stopped coming with a manual. I really hope that that wasn't part of an insidious plot.
So, yeah, that's our kind of future car news, but I'm going to move back to what I was going to talk about, some actual racing automotive aftermarket news. I did want to talk briefly about this. If you guys haven't seen it, you need to follow, and let me pull up the video again because I need to remember the name of this company. It is called Neutron Engines.
And great name.
Right?
Yeah.
I wonder if his name is Jimmy.
They need to at least hire a guy named Jimmy. Right?
Yeah, come on.
Or put this in a Jimmy.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. The Jimmy Neutron.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious. So this is a very small company, and this thing is still in development. And it's probably going to cost more than most grassroots racers can afford. But I will say, before I mention anything else, they did say they're going to try casting all this stuff to make this engine as affordable as possible.
Which is affordable as possible, maybe still five figures, but still.
Yeah, maybe. So what I'm talking about is a Honda K-Series-based V8. So you're using two Honda K-Series heads arranged on a custom cylinder block to make it a V8.
I'm really excited about this.
Right.
Because, I mean, this thing could rev to like 9,000 RPM.
Yeah.
And it'd be a V8. And I'm guessing they're using the K24s, so it'd be a 4.8 liter, depending on how they machine it.
So I didn't look into that. I don't know what displacement they're going with. It'd probably depend on what kind of rev range you wanted, you know.
Right.
2 liters is going to rev a little bit better than the 2.4, because I'm pretty sure for the 2.4 they put a stroker crank in it.
Oh, okay.
So
the bore is the same.
Yeah, I think so. The longer your crank throw compared to your, you know, your bore to stroke ratio, the longer the crank throw, the less it likes to rev, but the more torque it makes.
Okay, so in Honda tradition, it would want to rev high and make more power on the top end.
Right, so I think a shorter throw crank and bigger piston. So I'm guessing probably like a 4 liter V8, which is like, you know, that's like the Lexus 1UZ.
Yeah.
But with way better flowing heads.
And a high revving V8 is intoxicating to drive.
Yeah. Oh, I could only imagine what this thing's going to sound like. Hoonigan just released a video a while back. They built this 10,000 RPM Honda K-Series engine. Fully naturally aspirated. It made like 340 horsepower.
What'd they put it in?
Nothing. They gave it away.
They gave it away.
Yeah. So the whole video was them testing it and then boxing it up to ship out to somebody who won it.
I wonder what it's going to get put in.
Right?
Yeah.
If anybody listening knows who won that and what it's getting put in, let us know, because I'd like to at least talk to that guy or something, because that thing's going to... 10,000 RPM Honda K-Series. Yeah,
350 NA. That's got to be so much fun.
Right? It things just screams.
Yeah, that's got to be a blast. And honestly, I'd put that in a rear-wheel drive chassis.
Yes.
That would be excellent.
I did see a headline today. It was like, is Honda or rear-wheel drive Honda K-Series swaps becoming the new norm?
I hope so.
Right?
Yeah, I want a lot of people to do it so they can troubleshoot all the problems. So by the time I can do it, it's like, okay, I know how to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I know what not to do.
My only problem is that's going to increase the prices of Honda K-Series now.
Yeah, but I think that was always going to happen.
Yeah, but even though the CR-V K24s are like going up in price now.
Because the K20s are already shooting up.
Yeah, it's like, no, come on, this is LS is all over again.
But it's like that one day at Aspen we were talking, and we kind of came to the conclusion that if you made a list of the best five, you know, the top five best normally aspirated four-cylinder engines ever built,
mm-hmm.
Honda would own every spot on that list.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, you've got
I mean, you can make arguments for other ones at the time being really good,
yeah.
But they've been surpassed by Honda, and
yeah,
every one of them has.
I mean, you've got the S2000 motor that might take the number one spot, I would say.
I'd put K-Series above the
really?
F-Series, yeah.
I mean, 250 NA out of the box?
Don't get me wrong, the F-Series is amazing out of the box, but the K-Series has proven to be so much more durable. F-Series has cylinder head problems every once in a while.
Even the 22, once they boarded out?
The 22 is actually worse.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I know that the K-Series is just, it's more ubiquitous.
Yeah.
So more people are building them.
Right. Yeah, they made more of them. So that's part of the problem, too. If you only make one engine in one car, then,
yeah.
You know, the K-Series is putting everything. So that's why the LS was so popular.
Yeah, because you can get an LS out of a truck in a junkyard.
Right.
Yeah, and the... the B series, even going back to the 90s, the B series motor was great.
The B series motor is still great.
Yeah.
It's shocking how good that engine is held up, actually.
Yeah, there's the B16B and the B8. I think it was the B18C4 from the Type R.
You know your engine codes more than me.
I think those two held the world record for most powerful 1.6 and 1.8 NA engines in the world. They, like, broke world records.
Yeah.
And the F series from the S2000 held the record for the fastest pumping pistons until it was dethroned 14 years later by the Ferrari 458 Italia.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, that's Honda knows how to build a motor.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's been Honda's thing. Between motors and their transmissions, it's just their manual transmissions anyways. Their automatics suck. But
their manuals are really easy to drive.
Right? They're so good.
Yeah, you don't even have to be that accurate shifting gears.
Right.
And you know how you kind of lose a little bit of that, some of the fun when you put a short throw in because you have to be more accurate?
Yeah.
With Hondas, you can put a short throw in. It feels a lot better than some factory transmissions.
Yeah. Oh, I bet. I mean, even getting in, like, there was that old EF Civic that came in a long time ago.
Yeah, you know, the sedan?
Yeah, and even that thing, the shifter was a little worn out, but it's still just driving it. It was like, yeah, this is just like a good notchy shifter, like 250,000 mile EF Civic, and it still feels good.
And that car was like 32 years old.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, if you want to check it out, it's Neutron Engines. You can follow them on all the social media. I'm following them on Instagram right now just for updates because I want to see right now it's just a theory. They're just working everything out. I think they're going to be working on a billet block here in the next, like, month.
Oh, awesome. So it's going to be a machined aluminum block.
Mm-hmm. And then once they get that figured out, they want to move on to doing a cast block. So it'll pretty much be a short block that you find and put your own cylinder heads on.
Well, that's perfect. That's exactly what a Honda owner wants.
Right, exactly. Yeah. They really do want to make this affordable for more people than just, like, some... You know, there's the company out there that make, like, the Hayabusa-based V8s and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Those things are so ridiculously expensive. It's like 20 grand for an engine.
Right. And at that point, you can build a whole car.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, there's people out there with that kind of... There's people out there with that kind of money, but not us.
Hopefully us one day.
Yeah, right. So we're talking about 1.6 liter engines from Hondas. And that lines up perfectly with something I am... extremely excited about GridLife this week. So GridLife is, if you don't know, racing series throughout America right now. They put on the GridLife festivals. Honestly, if you haven't heard of GridLife yet, you're honestly living under a rock. If you have played the Forza Horizon games, that's what the GridLife festival is, pretty much.
Oh, cool. It's okay.
Racing, drifting, techno music, vendors, fucking video games, just like anything car related. It's really fucking cool. 2 years ago, they started doing the GridLife Alpine Horizon Festival down at Pikes Peak International Raceway.
Okay.
I didn't make it there last year because of COVID. They did have it, but it was just driver only and, like, media, and I just didn't bother going. But this year, everything's going to kind of be back to normal since everything's just back to normal now, in case you haven't noticed. Like, we're just fine. COVID's gone. It's fine. No more. Doesn't exist.
Like, the vaccine exists. Did you get one? No, but
it's out there.
But COVID's gone.
Yeah. So what I did down there was their track battle series, which is the time attack. It's time attack.
Yeah.
And I raced in street class. So street class allows quite a bit of modifications, honestly, and pretty much any car. So that sucked for me because a GTR with a tune could show up and compete in the same goddamn class as my Fiesta.
Yeah, that's not fair.
Right. So I was like, I was doing really good, especially for my Fiesta, but I just couldn't compete with fully built 1.8 liter or 2 liter or 2.4 liter Civics, you know, with K-series swaps and shit.
Yeah.
So GridLife heard our concerns, apparently, and is releasing a new Falcon Club TR. So that's Club Track Rat is what it's called.
I like it.
So the basics of this class are you run a spec tire, which is the Falcon RT660.
Okay.
Their new tire, which, ironically, I already have for the Fiesta.
Hey, you're already set up.
Yeah, I'm already good there. The engines and the cars are limited to 2.5 liters naturally aspirated or 1.6 liter turbo.
Okay.
And I have a 1.6 liter turbo.
Hey, it's perfect for you.
The class is basically made specifically for your... you know, your Hondas, your Fiestas, your Mini Coopers. I mean, 2.5 liters, that'll take you up to like a Sentra SER.
Yeah, I think that's what, the QR25, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's meant for the smaller cars, and it's still a lot of street class stuff. You know, you're not allowed a ton of modifications. The turbo cars, you have to keep the stock turbine. There's no ported turbos or anything like that.
So you can't run an aftermarket turbo on a 1.6 Miata?
Right.
Okay.
You can't run a turbo on a Miata, period.
Okay.
Because, and, well...
except for those Mazda Speed Miatas.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
That would count. And they do allow engine swaps, like any sort of engine swap, as long as it meets those specifications. So I guess if you found a 1.6 liter rear-wheel drive engine to put... the turbocharged engine to put in a Miata?
Yeah.
You could. I don't know what engine that would be.
Hmm.
But you can't take an NA engine and make it turbo.
Okay, so you can swap a turbo engine in.
Right.
And yeah, good luck finding a wrecked Mazda Speed Miata.
Right.
Those things, I think, only had a 2-year production run.
Yeah, they're really rare.
Yeah, and last time, they usually go for 10 grand.
They're also not all that incredibly fast. The turbo is actually a little bit too small.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
I know the intercooler is about the size of a small pizza box.
Yeah. Mazda kind of, they were like, yeah, we'll give you a turbo Miata, but not too much.
Yeah. And then we'll take it away really fast.
Yeah. They're like, no, you didn't deserve that. So they do want this class to be for people that, you know, modify their cars still versus street cars and stuff. So they do allow, like, you can change out bumpers and stuff as long as it doesn't offer like major aerodynamic advantages. You know, if you want to change out the way your bumper looks, it's not going to matter.
As long as you don't put a huge splitter under your car.
Right. You can do splitters actually, but to a certain size. You know, like, all the aero is pretty restricted. You know, the internals of the engines have to be stock.
Okay. Okay.
So you can't build up an engine, because that's the other thing. Like, in street class, there's actually the Gears and Gasoline guys on YouTube. They built a Honda K24 Civic for the street class of Grid Life.
And they completely built it?
Yeah, that engine is completely built. It's insane. Makes a ton of power.
Yeah.
You know, in a completely gutted Civic. It's like, well, right, it's going to be hard for me to compete with that.
Running against a car with factory boost and, you know, an interior.
Right. Cars have to have interiors.
Okay, so I like that.
They will allow gutted cars, but you got to run a weight ballast in it. So you're going to get a weight penalty for it. No nitrous. Like I said, factory turbos. No RX-7s. Sorry.
So the rotary's banned because that breaks their whole displacement
restriction. Yeah, pretty much. Well, I guess it doesn't say technically no RX-7s. It says no turbo RX-7s.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So that means you can't swap a 13 BREW into your Miata.
Right.
Okay.
You know, the suspension is pretty open, you know, but it's meant for people like with coilovers and stuff like that. Like I said, Falcon RT660 tire, 255 width tire is the maximum.
Okay.
So that will keep, I mean, most of the cars that have that small of engine aren't going to run that wide of a tire anyways.
255 is a pretty wide tire for a small car like that.
Right. Must be street registered and insured. So cool. You can't just build a race car.
Can't tow it there.
I mean, you could tow it there, but it has to be able to. So one thing they do is they do the what they call ice cream penalty, where they'll make you have to go get ice cream to prove that your car is a street car.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. So they did the Gears and Gasoline video I watched. They made them all do that in the street class. They all went to like Dairy Queen and Colorado Springs and got some ice cream and shit.
I bet that was a great image of a bunch of modified cars with numbers on the sides sitting in the drive-thru at Dairy Queen.
Right. So I am super excited for this class because I honestly think with a few modifications, which is basically a tune and some brake pads,
yeah,
more than anything, I think I might be able to take at least top three in that class this year.
Is there a restriction on big brake kits?
I didn't see anything about brakes in here, actually, now that I'm thinking of it. Suspension tires, it's probably under that one. No, nothing really for brakes. So I could do a big brake kit, but I'm limited on my budget. So.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's an expensive
thing. Also, my car did really well at that track just with some racing pads.
What kind of pads do you run?
Well, when I got the car, it was running Montoon pads, which Montoon is like, they're like the factory tuning thing in Europe for Fords.
Okay.
Like you can get their stuff and put it on your car and it has a factory warranty still.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I was running their pads, and their pads are really good for track, but I did not like them at autocross or the track attack stuff I do. They just didn't get enough heat in them.
Oh, so you kind of got a lot of noise and pulsation in the pedal a little bit?
They didn't bite as good.
Okay.
So for this, I actually just got factory Ford Fiesta ST pads, and they're really good because you just don't get enough heat in autocross or track battle or the track attack stuff at PPIR.
Because the laps are too short.
Yeah, laps are too short. So you don't get enough heat in the brakes to really make racing pads work. So street pads actually work way better. So I just got to swap out the pads and probably flush the brake fluid again. Because 2 years ago when I did that course, it's the Roval. So it's let's bring it up on the screen. I like having the screen here.
Yeah, this is useful.
Right.
We'll have to do a video podcast where we can use the visual aid.
So the Roval is the 3/4 NASCAR oval, then down into the street circuit inside the track.
Okay.
So the thing is, though, coming around the oval, anybody brings up the track map for Pikes Peak National Raceway, you'll see you go around the oval in a clockwise direction, and then you come down into this like 180 degree bend right here. And this, I was doing in the Fiesta, untuned Fiesta, was doing about 110.
Wow.
And then you're hard on the brakes right here.
Yeah, this
is like
a
third gear corner. So the first day there, I completely boiled my brake fluid. I actually kind of went off into the runoff here a little bit, the last lap. And
oh,
like,
man.
It just kind of blew the corner a little bit. And I was like, all right, back into the pits. I'm done.
Yeah. when your brakes set themselves on fire, it's time to pit.
So I need some brake pads that will deal with heat a lot better.
So were you running regular .3 or .4 or .5 fluid? Or
The .4. Yeah, just some good .4.
Okay.
Just flushed it out. Honestly, that held up pretty good. I might want to find some, like, quote-unquote racing brake fluid.
Right.
That might help a little bit.
But not so much to where you're swapping out all your rubber components to go silicone-based.
No, no. Do people still do that?
I've heard of people doing it. I've also heard of people who didn't do the research enough. Anyone out there, if you want to swap .5, it can't mix with your .3 or .4 fluid. And in many cases, you have to replace every rubber component in your braking system, master cylinder, hoses, calipers, everything.
Yeah.
And then you can't go back to .3 and .4 without doing the same thing.
Right. Yeah, I think, as far as I know, I think a lot of people just gave up on that shit.
Okay, well, that's good to know, because that was a serious pain.
Right. No, I think .4 fluid has just gotten so much better that you don't really need to do that weird shit anymore.
Yes, yeah, science.
Right? So... yeah, I think just brake pads, fluid, and a tune. Because, once again, we're talking about a Roval course. So, we're on a NASCAR oval. What's good on a NASCAR oval? Power.
Yeah.
I need more power.
that's the age-old adage for everybody. Yeah.
Well, like, infield stuff, like when I'm doing the track attack stuff, it's lower speeds. It's all about nimbleness and agility.
Yeah.
You don't really need power. In fact, more power might be detrimental because then I'm wheel spinning all the time.
Right, unless you've got that throttle control, you know.
Which I don't. I have an on-off switch for a foot.
Well, that's what the track time's about.
Right, exactly. I'm learning.
Yeah, and I mean, honestly, my laps aren't neat because I like to slide too much.
Right.
Yeah, I'm aggressive on the throttle because I want my rear end out even though I know it's slower.
Yeah, but it's more fun.
It is, and you go through a lot of tires.
So I'm hoping with just those few mods, I can go out this year to Grid Life, enter the TR class, and hopefully podium. That's my goal.
That'd be really cool, man.
Right?
Yeah.
Because I was the fastest street front wheel drive the first year there.
That's awesome.
Unfortunately, they only give awards out for street in general, whether you're front, rear, or all wheel drive. So there was some Evo there that just, Evo and a couple the Subarus that just fucking dominated me.
Okay. Yeah, and all-wheel drive, especially on those days when you go and it's really cold, since Pikes Peak International Raceway sits on top of a mountain.
No.
Is it not on top?
No, the raceway's not.
When I was there, it was just, I feel like I had clear skies, and then there was a cloud completely covering the racetrack. and when, as soon as you drove down, it was clear and sunny again.
No, PPIR is actually nowhere close to the Pikes Peak.
Well, yeah, I just thought it's at a higher elevation, though, right?
It's at a decent elevation, but when we went there, though, like, it was just fucking cold.
It was super cold?
Yeah, it was towards end of season. No, trust me, this race, GridLife Alpine Horizon Festival this year is July 22nd, for anybody listening.
Okay.
That's in Fountain, Colorado, which is South Colorado Springs, at Pikes Peak International Raceway. Everybody should come out, even if it's just to hang out, for sure. Pits are open, all that good stuff. There's concerts, 3-day event.
Oh, wow.
It's awesome. But it's on July 22nd in Colorado. It's going to be like 100 goddamn degrees outside. It's such a bad time to do that event.
Yeah, but, I mean, I used to go to Road Atlanta every year in May.
Yeah, that's just as bad.
Yeah, it's not worse. That was ridiculous. That it gets so sticky. You know, I'm almost ashamed to admit it, but I bought an umbrella for sunshade.
Oh, yeah. I bring an umbrella out to the track all the time.
I overpaid $50 for a Formula Drift umbrella.
Yeah, no, that's another tip. If you haven't been to the track before, even if you're just doing an autocross, bring an umbrella. You're standing in a parking lot for like 5-6 hours. There's no shade. You're just getting beat down with sun. Bring sunscreen. Bring an umbrella. You'll appreciate it.
And if you're a spectator, camping chairs aren't a bad idea either.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah.
Camping chairs are always a good idea. Actually, camping chairs, if you go to the track, are a good idea.
And a cooler full of beer.
Or if you're racing, water.
Yeah, water if you're racing. Beer if you're spectating.
So that is actually not our Affordable Racing Series highlight of the week. Although, I guess we're going to get kind of two in.
Hey, that's cool. That's what we're about.
Right? There's a lot of stuff out there.
Yeah.
There actually is. So, yeah, you should check out GridLife. They're open to street cars. Mine's a street car. You take your street car there. They have a whole lot of classes too. I'll actually talk about a different class next week probably. The Affordable Racing Series I wanted to highlight actually this week is Lucky Dog Endurance Racing. So these guys, I just found them out, or found them a couple weeks ago. They've been going for a while, I think, but they just announced a race in Arizona, which is their closest race to here.
Okay.
To Colorado. But hey, bird, we have a visitor.
Looks like a baby bird too.
Hey, that's a little guy. Oh, where's my cat? He would love this.
He wants in.
Right? He's like, fuck this snow, man. Let me in. Oh, there you go. Although the snow is nothing anywhere near what they were saying so far.
The beginning of the week, they said it was going to be 6 feet of snow in town, and it was going to start Thursday night.
Right.
I'm sitting here on Saturday afternoon, looking out the window, and there's flurries. But
there's nothing sticking.
Nothing sticking to the ground.
Yep. I mean, Sunday, I think, is now where they said it's going to hit super hard. But
so now it'll be Monday then.
Yeah, and we'll get a foot of snow. But whatever. Anyways, back to racing. Lucky Dog Endurance Racing is basically another affordable endurance racing series. So you have your shit can endurance racing series.
Your lemons.
Your lemons and your chump car, which I don't know if chump car is even still around. I'll have to look into that. But it was kind of like lemons, but not quite as goofy, but still shit car.
Interesting.
That's
probably why we haven't heard of it, because the goofiness is one of the best parts about
lemons. Yeah, it gets the attention. But there's a bunch of these endurance racing things popping up. And Lucky Dog Racing, their gimmick is your car has to be, I think it was 16 to 17 years old or older. 16. So 16 years or older in... Oh, okay. So they're changing the rules. For 2021, 2006 or older model year is acceptable. In 2022 and 2023, it'll be 16 years and 17 years old respectively.
Or still 2006. Okay. I like restricting it to an era like that.
Right.
Because, you know, the technology changes. They change racing.
Yeah,
they really did. They change not only the build, but your driving technique.
Yeah, quite frankly, cars made in the last 10 years are just so much better than cars made in before that. People don't think so. People like to rag and really love the old cars. I mean, we love our old cars.
We do.
That's what we grew up with.
But we also love our new cars.
Yeah, don't get me wrong. Like, a brand new Mustang will smoke. A brand new V6 Mustang will probably smoke a 90s GT Mustang.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think it makes more power.
I'd like to see that comparison.
Yeah, we should try to make that happen.
Right? That'd be hilarious.
I like that.
But so they're restricting it to older cars, kind of keep prices down. You know? The rules are pretty open, honestly. You know, it's a lot of safety stuff. You know, you got to have your roll cages and your fire suppression
systems. Which they should. Right, absolutely.
Exactly. So that's going to cost you some money. A good cage, good fire suppression system, that all costs money. But then you can kind of just do whatever you want, it seems like. You know, we're not talking about building a boat car like Lemons or something like that. But, you know, turbocharging seems to be all like open. Tuning is open. Whatever exhaust you want, you know. Aero, I think, is a little restricted. They don't want crazy aero vehicles.
How about tire width?
I'm sure there's a bunch of different stuff. I haven't gone through the rules all that closely. I'm sure I will eventually because I do want to build one of these.
I love the way they word this. Induction, open, that's right, turbos, superchargers, intake manifolds, etc.
Right? It's like whatever you want, you know. Tires rules. Where we go? So minimum 180 treadwear tires.
Huh.
That's weird. It's usually 200 treadwear tires. Oh, here we go. Never mind. All vehicles must run Hankook RS4 200 treadwear tires. There we go.
That's what I've got on my 240.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Nice. I really like spec tire classes because that right there like levels the playing field.
Yeah, and hopefully the tire companies that are sponsoring that are at least giving people who are entering into these series as somewhat of a break, a coupon or something.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
I'm sure if Hankook's like dealing with this, I'm sure you can get at least some sort of a contingency.
Yeah, and that would be great because, you know, then, you know, if you run that and you've got a coupon and you buy Hankook tires, maybe you wouldn't have bought a set of Hankooks, but maybe you'll be a customer after that.
Yeah. Well, just like with the Falcon tires for this thing, it's like, okay, well, what tires do I want to run? Well, I want to race in this class, so I'm going to buy these tires. It's brilliant for tire companies to sponsor racing series.
And Falcon Tire really knows what they're doing when it comes to sponsoring.
They really do.
They're the Penske of drifting. they sponsor some of the best drivers in the sport. And that's not to say that, you know, there are great drivers driving under every tire company's banner. But if you go to a pro drifting event, Falcon Tire has a huge trailer and dining area set up outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Hankook and Nitto and the other brands, you know, they run smaller tents, but Falcon puts on a show. They've got a spectacle.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They make a spectacle just out of working on their cars and stuff like,
the teal and blue.
Yep. It's good colors.
Yeah.
Lucky Dog, their whole thing. And the reason they did the rules the way they did is they wanted to make it easy for people to get into endurance racing. Because even Lemons, I mean, all these ones are pretty hard. You know, you kind of do your research and it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
Lucky Dog's actually super cheap from what I've seen. It's actually cheaper to enter one of these races than it is a Lemons race.
Wow.
I mean, granted, your car is probably going to cost you more because you don't have that $500 budget to restrict you.
Is it 24 hours straight?
No, I think the races, it depends on the track. So some of them are 12-hour races. Some of them are longer. Some of them do different stints, I think. It just really depends on the track, it looks like. But yeah, like just the entry fees are really low for endurance racing. And you can kind of show up, as long as you got the safety equipment, you can show up in any sort of car that meets your requirement, honestly.
And that's really cool because up to 2006, you've got a lot to work with.
Right. You got a lot of options.
Yeah.
But it's still restrictive enough, I feel like, to level the playing field, too.
Yeah.
You're not going to be bringing in a GTR.
Right. You're right. You're not going to. I mean, actually, couldn't you bring in a right-hand drive GTR?
If you really wanted to.
If you wanted to spend the money and import an R33 or R34, because those are.
I have a feeling these guys, if you show up in like a legitimate race car, like. Ridiculous race car, they're going to give you some sort of like weight penalty or something. They're just going to be like, well, you followed the rules, but not really. So,
like, this is your sliding intercooler scoop.
So, yeah, check out, like I said, Lucky Dog Racing League. They are doing a race in Arizona this summer. but they do races across the country at real legit racetracks. So if you know somebody that has a race car or you want to build a race car for cheap, get your team together. In the grand scheme of things, to go racing and get the amount of seat time you get with an endurance race like this, this is probably the cheapest form of racing.
And that's the best way to get into it, you know?
Right.
Because let's face it, cost in any racing series is the most, you know, is the greatest barrier to entry.
Right.
That's what's going to keep you at home. That's what's kept me at home.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're living in a world where a lot of people don't have a ton of money.
Yeah.
Just the way it is. We're not going to get into the politics of that. But, you know, it's getting harder and harder to make enough money to be able to say, I want to build a race car and just have that, like, throwaway money type stuff. Because it is, at the end of the day, throwaway money. You're never going to get that money back.
Yeah, you're never going to get it back unless, you know, you're measuring the joy you get from it.
Right.
You know, which I look back on days I've spent on the track as some of the fondest memories I have.
Oh, yeah.
You know, those are my best days.
Yeah, I totally agree.
You go out with butterflies in your stomach and you might be nervous, you know, on the verge of puking for a lot of it.
Right.
But you still come away with it having had an experience that enriches your life.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of what it's all about. Like, it's overcoming that adversity. And even if you just, like, when you're starting out, just finishing the race is winning, you know?
Yeah.
And then there's always, the thing I love about racing is there's always room to improve and there's always new things to try. It's just, even it would take a special person, maybe a Lewis Hamilton or something, to get out there and just be like, oh, I'm at the race, so I'm gonna race, whatever. I'm like, I'm not nervous. I would think every racing driver, I don't care how good you are, gets nervous before a race.
I bet Lewis Hamilton, even when he was a kid karting, had those days.
Yeah.
You know?
Then again, I think Lewis Hamilton might just have no fear.
Maybe.
Have you seen the video of him playing with a tiger?
No, he played with a tiger?
Yeah, he knows some dude that owns tigers.
Of course he does.
Yeah. So there's this video of Lewis Hamilton sneaking up on a tiger.
Wait, that video is Lewis Hamilton?
Yeah, you've seen that.
So right? I have seen it. Yeah. I didn't know that was Lewis Hamilton in the video.
Look at it next time. It's fucking Hamilton.
I was focusing on the tiger. I was like, oh, well, that guy's going to get mauled. I'm going to watch this tiger.
Could you imagine what his team was thinking when they saw that video?
Oh, was he active racing when he did that? So he's worth $1 billion at that point.
Right.
And he's just, oh, I'm going to jump in a cage and play with the tiger.
Yeah. I'm going to sneak up on a tiger and surprise it. Brilliant.
I'm guessing he got dressed down for that a few times.
Yeah. I remember when I saw that GIF because it was like, man sneaks up on tiger. And I'm like, is that fucking Lewis Hamilton? Like, hold up.
I guess that's the ultimate test of reaction time.
Yeah. Can you out-reaction time a tiger?
Yeah, I mean, it sells him, but yeah.
Right.
If I were his crew boss, I would be losing my hair over that.
Right. Oh, it's ridiculous. So yeah, well, before that tangent, Lucky Dog Racing, check it out. There'll be links to it in the show notes. Like I said, for the amount of track time you get for the amount of money you pay, it's great. It is a lot of money, but when you actually add up the track time you're getting in an endurance race, I think it's well worth it.
Yeah, 24-hour, you said it was 12 hours? Or
usually they're like 2 12-hour stints.
Yeah, 12 hours on a weekend. Track.
Right.
Even if you're switching between drivers.
You're still doing like hour stints probably.
Yeah. You're driving until you're exhausted.
Right.
which that's the way to train to do anything.
Yeah. No, that you're going to learn so much about yourself doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You learn your own limits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's a very, very important part of racing is learning limits.
Yes.
Yours, the cars, the tracks.
Yes.
All that good stuff. Any project car updates?
I haven't gotten anything done, personally.
Yeah, same. We're being pretty lazy right now. Last weekend I was going to go work on Iggy, but we got stuck doing the brakes on your truck.
Yes, which I've personally never seen a brake cable or brake hose disintegrate like that.
That one just broke so easily.
It was funny. You're like, dude, I swear I didn't do it. and I was like, dude, I watched you. You just you wiggled my brake caliper, and then a bunch of rust fell out and my brake hose fell off.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, it was, if you don't follow Religious Beat on Instagram or Facebook, you should, because you would have seen the photo of the broken, rusty brake hose. So then we had to find brake hoses and run around town to get those, and
yeah.
I just didn't end up having time to work on Iggy, so.
But I was able to get here through Snowmageddon thanks to your bold efforts.
No, thank you. Yeah. Yes, Snowmageddon.
Yeah.
Still nothing on the ground.
It's still just snow in the air.
I'm so disappointed. That does mean maybe I will actually get to the shop tomorrow to work on Iggy. We'll see what it actually does tomorrow. But because that was my plan. I was like, oh, well, next weekend I'll go in. I'll get a bunch of stuff done. And I was like, snow like crazy. I'm like, well, that's one thing that sucks. I did see a post on one of the Facebook groups, you know, that was like, oh, hey, it's going to be snowed in. What project car are you working on this weekend? I'm like, well, my project car is all the way across town, so I'm not going to work on it.
I'll take a video of working on the 240 in my garage.
There you go.
Which I thought I was going to have to dig out my garage door this weekend, but apparently that's not going to be a problem.
Nope. Apparently you can just go out there and work. It's no big deal.
Really sick of not driving my 240.
Yeah, we need to get that, or you need to get that back on the road for sure.
Yes.
And then viewer mail. We don't have any viewer mail yet. It's all good. You know, we're still growing for sure, and getting people to respond to this stuff always takes some time. But hey, if you didn't know, I didn't promote it well enough. We are accepting viewer mail. You know, whether it's feedback on the show, maybe you don't like our tangents as much and you would like us to stay on topic a little more. Or maybe you want us to do more tangents. I'm sure there's both parties out there.
Maybe I made a mistake and you want to email me in and tell me how much of an idiot I am.
Oh, people love doing that.
Do it.
People love correcting. Also, if you just have questions about like the automotive world, getting started in racing, even if you have questions on like tuning or what parts you should get, whatever you think we can help you with, you can send in questions. And the thing I really do want to do is shout outs for people, you know, the people that have helped you through this, the shops that have helped you through this, the tracks that have stayed open through COVID with all the bullshit going on.
But also respected COVID.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Also did respect it, but, you know, was managed to like keep the scene going.
Yes.
And I only want good shout outs. I know there's lots of negativity out there. I know we started out this episode with some negativity on some street racers. But let's try to keep it positive. You know, think about the positive things in the world. And
yeah, we've got enough negative out there.
Yeah, exactly. We're all about the positive here.
Yeah.
If you want to email us, it is contact@religionofspeed.com. And I'm going to be promoting that more on the social media too, because I do want to hear from you guys. I want to interact with you more. You know, it is fun talking to you, Chris, but I want to open this up to the audience as well.
Yeah, let's make this conversation. Let's open it up to the world.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's going to do it for us. And for the first time, I think ever, we actually covered all the talking points on the docket.
We actually hit them all.
Yeah.
Wow.
I can't believe we did that.
We're pros, man.
Right? Yeah, we're getting there. We're getting this down eventually. As usual, I want to thank the band Wheels for the use of our theme song. You can check them out at wheelstheband.bandcamp.com. I'm really hoping they get to touring here maybe at the end of this summer. Maybe we can get a little Religion of Speed meet at one of their concerts.
That would be great.
Right?
Yeah.
And show them some love. Yeah, I think that's going to do it. So, Chris, thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Matt.
And joining us. Join me? Yeah, me. That's what I went for.
Right. I thought you were referring to yourself as a plural.
There's multiple of me. All right, everybody. Peace out.